a time.
The talk show Africa Now airs Wednesdays at 1 p.m. It's a modern view on historical issues concerning the entire African world, addressing how African people are participating in globalization, ways in which the rest of the world continues to exploit African resources, uncovering labor violations by corrupt politicians and Western government powers. Learn what's happening now in interviews with artists, activists, scholars, and a host of other experts each episode. Listen Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Africa Now is also available on iTunes Podcasts, Google Play Music, as well as SoundCloud, on your station for Jazz and Justice, WPFW, Washington.
I'm Kamaya.
I'm Amira.
I'm Kaya.
I'm Kamaya.
And you're listening to WPFW, Washington.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone from the county farm. Another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going to walk the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no. What I do?
Turn around. Turn around. Put your hands behind your back. Let's go. Let's go.
The jury of your peers having found you guilty. 10 years.
What?
Come on. Come on. Get that set.
I was in jail, too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice. That's what you find. Just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now, here's your host, Roach Brown.
Good morning, and welcome to Crossroads, coast to coast. We come to you every Tuesday at the same time here on WPFW 89.3 FM, your station for jazz and justice. For last week, we brought our show to you live from L.A. We were in L.A. meeting with some people over there, and our guest was a gentleman on named James Anderson, who'd been on death row for 44 years. Before that, a month before that, we were up in Martha's Vineyard up in Massachusetts. 2 months before that, we were down in New Orleans broadcasting. So we're taking Crossroads on the road, coast to coast. So whatever city that Martine and I are in, we would try to broadcast our show from there. So if you've the first part of this year, we've done about 4 or 5 shows outside of the bases of Washington, D.C. So stay tuned for some interesting topics. This is Crossroads, and we always open up with what we call the grapevine. Information that you can use, the grapevine. Congressman Eleanor Holmes Norton introduced a bill today to prohibit the Federal Bureau of Prisons from charging individuals in his custody co-pays for health care visits. Individuals serving sentences for D.C. code felonies are also currently confined in the BOP's custody. BOP residents should be encouraged to seek medical care before their health conditions worsen, Norton said. Preventive care is more effective than later stage intervention. It's much less expensive for the federal government, saving taxpayers money in the long run. The objective is successful reentry into the community, and inmates cannot return to society successfully without their health and well-being. Charging copay is unethical to this goal. Currently, BOP inmates are required to pay a fee of $2 per health care visit. Inmates earn only 10, 12 cents to 40 cents per hour from work assignments. That is totally out of order, man. There's co-pays. Also, the BOP, the Bureau of Prison, is holding 12,000 prisoners in solitary confinement. A report released by the U.S. Government Accountability Office in February found that the Federal Bureau of Prisons was holding about 8% of its population, nearly 12,000 prisoners in special housing units, called SHUs, the agency's polite term for solitary confinement. In SHU, prisoners are isolated up to 23 hours per day, as the GAO noted. The United Nations passed what's called the Nelson Mandela Rule, which means it's supposed to restrict or eliminate or abolish solitary confinement. And right now we have over 12,000 people locked up in solitary confinement in the Federal Bureau of Prisons. This is not including the men and women and children who are confined in state facilities. So the Nelson Mandela Rule is not being adhered to or followed. Elite colleges see black enrollment drop after affirmative action strike down. Amherst College and Tufts University report lower number of blacks. Enrollment for black students fell at two elite colleges in the first class since the Supreme Court's decision last year to strike down college admissions and upend the nation's academic landscape. Amherst College and Tufts University, both in Massachusetts, reported a drop in the share of black first-year students, an early sign that the high court's ruling could negatively affect racial diversity in the U.S. More selective colleges and universities, according to the New York Times. Freedom to vote. Across the country, confusing laws that exclude people with felony convictions from voting have extreme consequences. Your support for legislation that restores federal voting rights to all returning citizens can make a difference. The U.S. Senate needs bipartisan support to advance comprehensive election reform legislation that includes federal voting rights restoration for returning citizens. Urge your senators to support S2747, the Freedom to Vote Act. California inmates fight wildfires, but if prisons can't supply enough crews, what's next? California has long depended on incarcerated people to battle wildfires. Since the end of World War II, the state has relied on inmates to staff its more than 200 hand crews deployed each fire season to lay hoses and help contain the blazes by cutting fire lines free of vegetation. But a steady decline in the state's prison population due to sentencing reform has left many of California's minimum security conservation camps operating at half capacity or less. As of 2024 fire season kicks into high gear, California Fire is short 110 of its 236 budgeted hand crews. Hand crews are truly what extinguishes wildland fires. And we don't have enough of those in the state right now. And they need to get some more inmates to fight fires. And also we just found out that we did a story a couple of years ago about the fires in California. And usually if a guy worked several years in prison fighting fires, when he got released, he couldn't get a job back with the same fire department that he worked with while he was incarcerated. But as we understand it, that law has changed. So those men who are working to fight fires in California, once they are released, they are eligible or able to be employed by the California Fire Department. That's a step in the right direction. Israel must end mass incommunicado detention and torture of Palestinians from Gaza. Abusive Israel laws used to arbitrarily detain Palestinians from Gaza indefinitely without a charge or trial. Unlawful legalizes incommunicado detention, enables enforced disappearance, and must be repeated. Prisoners are not allowed to communicate with their attorneys or their families, and some families don't know if they're locked up dead or where they are. Horror and torture testimony from 27 detainees. Israel authorities must end their indefinite incommunicado detention of Palestinians from the occupied Gaza Strip without charges or trial under the unlawful combatants law in flagrant violation of international law, said Amnesty International. And Nelson Mandela said that he was asked why he was friends with Yasser Arafat, the head of the Palestinian Liberation Forces some time ago. And he said that your enemies are not my enemies, and that the apartheid that the South Africans were experiencing was similar or worse in Gaza. So the Gazans or the Palestinians are going through what's called apartheid, the same thing that we did when the folks in South Africa went through that with Nelson Mandela. So the Israel authorities must end their indefinite incommunicado detention of Palestinians. And lastly, the BOP is holding, I already reread that one. Okay, that's it. That's been the grapevine for this morning. Thank you for tuning in. We try to bring you news and information from around the world of different places to keep you in tune, because we found out some stuff that, we share with you. Whatever we find, we bring it to you. Now we get to what our topic is this morning, is black suicide on the increase. is black suicide on the increase? And our guest this morning is Dr. William Lawson, professor of psychiatry and behavioral sciences, George Washington University, Howard University. He's also the founder of the Institute for Reducing Disparities. Dr. Lawson has a tremendous resume of colleges and universities and things he's been involved in. So we asked him to come in so we can share some insight on this topic of black suicide. Suicide is on the increase inside of institutions, inside of the, out in our community, and particularly among our youth. We had a high suicide rate among our youth. And new federal data shows that the suicide rate among black youths ages 10 to 19 surpassed that of their white peers for the first time in 2022, increasing to 54% since 2018, compared to a 17% decrease for white youth. In fact, the suicide rate among black adolescents is increasing faster than other racial and ethnic groups. And we asked Dr. William Lawson to come in and share some light on this topic. Good morning, Dr. William Lawson. How are you doing?
Very well, and thank you so much for inviting me to speak. Are you hearing me okay?
We hear you fine. I see that we got the same barber. All I can see is the top of your head on this Zoom, but your hair's just as long as mine. It ain't there, is it?
My wife is convinced, though, that I need to cut it more.
I go to the barber shop every week, and I don't have no hair, but I go there and just get my skin massaged.
And also get some knowledge, too.
There you go.
That's one of the key places where you can find out what's going on in the community. And keep you right on the road. Thank you for linking what's happening here to what's happening internationally and also historically, because the suicide issue does have international as well as historical precedents that's extremely important. One of the points I want to make is, I think you asked the question correctly. Is the suicide rate increasing? It should be obvious that whether or not a person committed suicide or not, but actually it's not as clear cut in our community. Unfortunately, if you go back and look, when I was in school, I was told in medical school, they said, you people are lucky. You don't kill yourself. You don't get depressed. But when I check back full disclosure, I'm from a small rural community down in Virginia. We didn't talk about things like suicide. It didn't exist. And so I can see why they had that impression. But then didn't take long for me to find out otherwise, again, full disclosure, found out that I had a relative who had committed suicide. The word was on the street, but it wasn't in the statistics. And that is part of the problem. We're already seeing that our folks are doing things like killing each other. One of my colleagues when I was at Howard was Nathan Hare, who said,
him. Yes.
Yeah. He was, and he made an interesting point that I think is still very appropriate, because he noted this, a lot of these so-called homicides look very similar to what you think someone's trying to get themselves killed. Folks who go out and say, we're invincible, or we do dumb things, and set themselves up to be done in. And he came out with this concept of quasi-marticide. So when we look at the suicide statistics, and you mentioned the growth in the suicide rate, look at the homicide rate as well. Look at the drug abuse rate as well, drug overdose. These are all increasing in lockstep and disproportionately in our community.
That makes sense. One of the things that we've saw in our travels around the city and across the country, that they're talking to so many black youths now committing suicide. Some of these cases that you read about where these guys are doing is killing and shooting. That's a form of suicide, because they are hopeless, desperate, and frustrated with no way out. And they're going to strike out. And it says, hurt people, hurt people. And these kids are hurting. And the suicide rate is off the chart. In Washington, D.C., they said The truancy rate in school is 40%. So 4 out of 10 kids do not make it to school. And that's because it's for various reasons. Some kids can't come out of their house because of gang affiliation or gang territory. They can't cross the street because the school is located in another gang's territory. There's nobody home, mom or pop. Mom is in the street and dad is in the joint. And the kids are left to raise themselves. And they're talking about arresting these kids as opposed to finding out what the basic problem is. And we noticed that the suicide rate is off the chain for young kids from 10 to 19. And it blew me away that not only is that blew me away, the suicide rate in prison, the Justice Department Office of Inspector General found that from 2014 to 2021, 187 people died by suicide inside the Federal Bureau of Prisons. And the rate has been growing constantly. And there's nobody seems to be focusing on this particular issue of the deaths in prison. Because like you said a little earlier, Doc, a lot of people use drugs as a form of suicide, or they just take an overdose intentionally or whatever, or they don't have any reason to live. What are some of the factors that lead to suicide in the Black community, Dr. Lawson?
I think the important thing is we look as if there's some sort of hidden plot or a hidden conspiracy. There's no hidden conspiracy. What's going on is right before our very eyes in terms of issues that lead to suicide. You hit it right on the head. And we know that feelings of hopelessness, lack of prospects for the future, awful socioeconomic circumstances, all those factors increase the risk for suicide. And we know that having a mental problem, and I don't mean going crazy, I mean being depressed, sad, unhappy, are risk factors for suicide. And especially for the African-American community, depression, hopelessness, feelings of being distressed is often overlooked and underdiagnosed and underrecognized.
You know, they said that deaths by suicide were most common, making up 54% of deaths in an eight-year period. Suicide is a leading cause of death in jails in the United States. In 2019, suicide was the cause of 355 jails, which is more than double the national average. Jails are the highest, I guess, incubator for suicide, because when you're first arrested, taken off the street, you're just snatched away from your family, you lose everything, your house, your car, your clothes. You can't see your kids, et cetera. And then you're facing an impossible sentence when you do go to court. And all these factors, and then you're locked into a little cell, and you can't get out and you can't communicate. These factors increases the stress factors, and they in turn contribute to somebody committing suicide. And I've seen this happen inside of institutions, out in the street, and something needs to be done. And you said it before, we need to deal with mental health issues. Sure, our young kids don't have houses, they don't have homes, they don't have jobs, and don't have no hope. And hopelessness is one of the biggest causes or contributing factor to suicide. What do you think we can do out here, Doc, to address the suicide problem? I know mental health services are needed, but from your point of view, what do you see that we could do or society could do to stop this impossible climb of suicide among our Black population?
Well, let me take it back to an earlier point that you made. Full disclosure, I used to be the medical director for Pulaski County Jail in Arkansas, and I also more recently worked with the D.C. Superior Court in a program with Pathways to Housing, in which we try to provide mental health services to folks who had an alternative of being sentenced. One of the issues that I discovered in Pulaski County was that they were going to have a suit because chaining was used to treat people who were suicidal.
Chains.
I said, chaining. You chain the person to the wall. So I said, wait a minute. That looks familiar. I just come from a trip to West Africa and seeing how they had folks they were trying to get folks that lived in the bush to stop treating the mentally ill by chaining them to a tree. I said, well, those folks in Africa, they don't know any better. Yeah, yeah. But then to come back to the U.S. and to find that it was a common practice in many of our correctional institutions was a real shocker. And what did they do? They were doing it because there was a perspective many times in many folks working in incarceration systems, security takes precedent over treatment and care. Yeah. Only 17% of the folks who have recognized mental problems in the correctional system actually get not only recognized as such, or even get any kind of support or counseling, but actually get any kind of linkage to services. So one of the problems is that some of these issues are right before our very nose, but we're not taking the steps to correct them. We haven't even got to the point of looking at new and innovative treatments or anything like that. We have to get to the point of recognizing that in corrections, and by the way, African Americans are much more likely to be in a correctional system for non-violent offenders than anybody else, and are much less likely to get mental health services in the correctional system. So in that correctional system, we have the techniques to be able to make a difference in terms of whether or not folks have better outcomes. And as you mentioned, a lot of folks end up in locked away or in tight security when if they happen to be suicidal. And we already know in other settings that if folks are locked up, chained, or whatever, when they are suicidal, they come out to the systems much more likely to have make a successful suicide attempt. So they went in, and that's the other point, but half of the people we know now who make active suicide attempts, in fact, change their mind. In this kind of system, unfortunately, they don't, and they end up completing the suicide. So the information is right in front of us, and I think we have the tools that we can do something to keep that from happening. Part of it is a change of perspective. Look at the correctional system. If we're going to rehab people, let's provide rehab. If we're going to provide them with an alternative to spend the rest of their life not in the correctional system, let's provide them with the tools to do so. Instead, we don't. And we try to set up a punitive system, but we don't people anymore. We don't, and yet in many ways, we do try to make it as unpleasant as possible so that when they do come out, they often don't have many options in terms of their lives.
Yes. You know, I was in prison serving life and I was in solitary and I went insane and I wanted to commit suicide and they took me out of there and sent me to John Howe Pavilion over in Southeast for the criminally insane. And my psychiatrist was Dr. Frances Welsing.
Right.
And that young lady saved my life because she explained that I had some mental illnesses and they were trying to give us an electric chair. And she stood up and spoke and saved our life because, in fact, they chastised her and gave us some pushback for supporting us. And again, I thought about committing suicide, but I never made that move. But I had that thought of many days inside serving life with no hope, no future, no nothing. You're 21 years old and your life is over. And that kind of thing. More men and women who commit suicide are in solitary confinement. They're in a cell by themselves. And most suicides happen in county jails or state jails. That's when people first are taken off the street and they got to adjust to this unhuman regimen and environment. So we got another thing, doctor, came down. That you got another form of suicide that I mentioned to you the other day that hasn't even been documented. It's called prison side. There's another form of suicide where you don't take your life, but you go back to prison because you can't put up with what's going on outside. So this, we call this prison side, where a lot of men and women are going back to prison after doing decades inside of an institution. And they can't adjust or acclimate to this what's going on outside. So suicide has another cousin called prison side. And this is for those men and women who deliberately or intentionally commit a crime or violate the rules to go back inside because they can't make it out here. Suicide is, again, I rely on that Nelson Mandela rule that came down from the United Nations, that restrictive housing or solitary confinement should be eliminated. And for these men and women who are dying, and more than half of the prisoners who die from suicide are in solitary confinement or they're in a cell by themselves. All right. We got two calls on already, Doc. We'll take our first caller. You're on the air. Question or comment, please, for Dr. Lawson.
And turn your radio down, please.
Yes, is it me?
Yes, come on.
Good morning. So I want to suggest that one of the things that the city could do to help our children, instead of locking them up at 13 and 14 years old for doing some things that basic teenagers do, is to fund the grassroots nonprofit organizations. Because these organizations have a pulse on these children. However, they're not getting enough money to create enough seats, to build capacity, to provide the services that these young people need, especially during the after-school hours. So that's one of the great solutions. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for your call.
He's absolutely good.
You want to respond to that, Doc?
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. As you know, we've been working with several grassroots organizations locally. D.C. has a lot of nonprofits. And I was just impressed at the number of nonprofits that the district had. But I was also impressed at how little money that each one of them had. I said, how are you going to be able to do anything with, you don't have enough money to pay your staff?
Yes.
I spent some time in Austin, Texas, and Little Rock, Arkansas. I was impressed at how much they accomplished. Austin was wealthy, but Little Rock was not. They accomplished quite a bit with grassroots organizations. We had youth violence programs and so forth. Dick Gregory came by to help us start a program, reduce the violence rate. But what I noticed was that their organizations got support from the cities to support the grassroots groups to put the money into the communities and also develop meaningful programs. You know, you cannot live on money alone, but you can't do very much if all you can do is get enough money to just pay a couple of general staff and not be able to do outreach. The organizations must work together and they must use, and I think that it's important to use some of our own institutions that we've used for the years, such as the churches, barbershops, beauty parlors, and others. And those programs that do that, in many instances, have been found to be very successful. So we have some of those opportunities and knowledge in our community. Unfortunately, we don't have the kind of access to not only just money, but also basic communication resources that we should have. I'm still amazed that in D.C., folks had to go up and kids had to go to the library and sit outside the library because they don't have internet in their houses. That kind of thing is unbelievable in terms of our nation's capital.
And unacceptable. We'll take another call before a station ID break.
You're on the air. Next caller, you're on the air. Question or comment, please.
Hopefully I'm the next caller. This is Gwen Levi calling from Baltimore. Hello, everyone.
Well, hello, Gwen Levi. We just talked to you a couple of days ago.
Yes, you certainly did. We missed you at your event, but guess what? I am so glad that I got a chance to come on this morning. What you are talking about is so, so important that right now, what's going on in our formerly incarcerated community with trauma resulting from the incarceration, resulting from their return home, it's creating issues that lead to suicide. I'm not saying that I know of any that's happened so far, but here in Baltimore, we've begun to address that issue in many different facets by having community meetings, going into our reentry programs and discussing trauma. So I'm glad to listen in and get the knowledge that I'm gaining from you all this morning so that I can bring it back to my community and share, because the need is there. Roach, you know that for yourself.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, you,
I don't
you
care
said,
if you did
go ahead,
two
go ahead,
days
go ahead, finish.
or 10 years or 50 years. We've got guys coming home now that have done 42 years. These new bills, the IRA bill there in D.C., the Second Chance Local here in Maryland, are letting guys out who have done 30, 40 years. They need, as far as I'm concerned, mandatory mental health support.
Yeah, you go. You're right. It should be mandatory. You're right, Gwen. I like that suggestion. It should be mandatory. You know, it's just amazing. If we can recognize that when a serviceman go into the war and they stay over for a tour of duty for 18 months or 2 years, then they come back and they got PTSD, and they recognize that they need to have psychological or mental health counseling. That for 18 months or 2 years, they've been on the front line. Here go people be 30, 40, 50 years on the front line in prison, and they don't see it. They have a need. They've been traumatized beyond description.
What are you talking about?
And there's no services there for these people. And again, somebody, I think you mentioned, Doc, we've been meeting every week with a group called CREWS, C-R-E-W-S, Communities Respecting Everyone's Right to Survive. And we've been meeting with 40 or 50 nonprofit leaders about saying what we can do to address this problem. And this suicide keeps popping up every time we go to, do a program. In fact, we got a group of guys, Dr. Lawson, every Monday and Wednesday that we're on Minnesota Avenue in Southeast Washington in Eli Place at two schools, Kimball and Sousa. And we got guys working there, walking the corners, helping and escorting the kids back and forth. And we don't have the funds. We need funds to make this a reality. But guys are doing this on their own. We got to pay their own gas, come from all parts of the city to make sure we can escort these kids back and forth safely. So we need help. We need resources. And as you said, Doc, the whole community need to come together to help us out to make sure that we can address this problem. This is WPFW Crossroads. My name is Roach Brown, and this is our station break. This is WPFW 89.3 FM on your radio dial. You can catch us anywhere in the world now. PFW is worldwide, and we go global. So, folks, the issues we're talking about pertains to affect everybody. This is the same problem that's happening in every city in America. And our youth are out of control, and we can reach them. We got the resources. We got the horses, but we don't have the resources. We got people who are risking their lives to go out in these communities to stop this. Some of these kids that's doing all this shooting. I was over the jail, Doc. I'm going to shut up after this. I was over the jail talking to some guys. And one guy was in the corner. He wouldn't come to our group. I said, "What's going on, soldier? Why won't you join the group?" He said, "He want to go home." And the guy said, "You killed three people. You're already home." These kids never thought about what happened after they shoot somebody. Mm-hmm. Now, he said he never thought about him getting locked up or going to prison. Now, his whole life is over. So we've been working with guys that can deal with critical thinking, violence interrupters, people who can squash beefs and go back in these neighborhoods. And we got these guys who have been in 30, 40, 50 years who are neighborhood legends, who can, but they don't have no money. They come out of prison after 40 years and you get $50 after 40 years. What the hell can you do with $50? There's no resources, as was alluded to make sure we got people on board to help. This is a crisis. Everything we talked about on this show is a crisis. I don't care what the topic is. It's a crisis when it comes to the Black population. We have another call on, yes. Mike. Come on with the next
from
call.
From Germany, man.
Oh, that's my man Rick from Germany. Come on here, Rick.
Is the doctor still there?
Yes.
Come on, Rick. He's waiting for you.
Okay. Doc, I dropped out of a private school there in Washington, D.C. About the 9th or 10th grade year. And I dropped out not only because the Secret Services were harassing me, but also because the school system, both public and private, they just kept moving me along, knowing that I couldn't function in math, in literacy, in social studies. I wasn't doing the work, and so I dropped out. I'm asking you, are the children dropping out at younger ages, younger than 9th grade, are they dropping out in elementary school now?
Yes, they are, and the COVID incident was especially devastating to our community because a lot of folks did not have the resources to do homeschooling. They did not have the resources to reach out to whatever resources were in the community. So when they stopped their education, sometimes for legitimate reasons of lack of resources, they found it very difficult to get back in. 9, 10, 11-year-old, very difficult if you stay away from reading, stay away from studying, to get back in and get into the cycle of prioritizing education and trying to learn. We need schools are necessary. We need, not everybody has the resources to do a lot of homeschooling. Also, many of our community schools that's developed. Some cultures develop strong neighborhood community schools. We've done some of that in the district, but I think we still got to work to see what we can do to make our public schools responsive and to be responsive and to be helpful.
Great, that's okay. Much better. I think we have another call as well.
Next caller, please. That was that gentleman call from Germany. Rick calls every month from Germany. I'm gonna make sure you get a passport to come on back and be in the studio with us, Rick. Our next call, a question or comment, you're on the air.
Yes, my name is Maria Bradley. In 2015, my grandson had run away from home. They found his body in Anacostia River. He had committed suicide. He had been receiving resources. Both of our family were able to have excellent insurance. This was not the first time he had tried to commit suicide. Along that term of, I want to say is that I suspected a long time ago after he did that, I ran into a principal at a school. I'm a retired educator. And his grandson, the same age, had committed suicide.
Wow. How old was he?
He told 15.
Oh,
both
wow.
of them were 15. When I told the principal that I was sorry to hear about his son, he said he had just come from a funeral of his best friend, and his best friend's grandson had committed suicide. There is an epidemic in our community.
And what you're describing is unfortunately all too common. It's not that people go around and keep it a secret. Folks, many times folks who complete suicide often let someone know, the friend, preacher, the teachers, they let someone know. And unfortunately, many times, even many of our professionals simply don't know what to do about it. When folks say that life isn't worth living, they don't know what else to do, they know what can we do. Take it seriously. If they get no other message, take that seriously. And recognize that there are, and make sure we get the resources out, especially in our community, about where you can get help if you feel that you can't manage.
There's a lot of guilt on my part because that morning I had no idea that that was on his mind.
Yes.
And my thing is, in this society where there is no hope that these young people are committing suicide at a rate that is much larger than the rate of the other population. When you feel like there's no hope, social media, and nowhere else to turn to, because we have to come together as a community to help our children. His father took a bicycle ride from Washington, because he loves Chipotle, all the way back here, 2,000 and some miles to put suicide prevention on his own. So we must, as a community, and it crosses all economic barriers, let us not just say one group of people. It affects all of us. Don't care how much money you have, how much education you have, or how little. It affects all areas. And in the prison population, I would venture to say this is 21st century genocide of our young black men.
Yes.
That's all I have to say.
Well stated.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I'm glad you said what you said. Go ahead.
We have another caller.
Come on, caller. You're on the air. Question or comment, please. You're on the air.
Yes. Good morning, my brother. This is Satellite Late. To the psychiatrist person, ever since it seems like, since they have legalized marijuana, children should not be smoking that stuff. You know what I mean? Because their brain, from what I know, I don't know, knew from a man named Dr. John Dillingham. I know you probably know him.
I remember John Dillingham, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I worked with him at the National Association of Psychiatry when
I
was
in college. I know John Dillingham real well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He did a lot of work with you, of course, about the incarceration of psychology.
That's right. That's right. He worked with us in the Inner Voices in Lawton.
That's
yes.
right. However, yeah, I think, you know, they need to stop these young people from getting their hands on this marijuana because their brains is not developed. I don't have a degree in psychiatry, but I did learn a lot working with him at the National Association of Psychiatry. And another thing, while they putting the migrants in these ghetto neighborhoods like Chicago, they wear mega hats up there, raising hell, because they gave these people $51 million and they shut down the rec center up there because they got all these beds and supplies they want to give them. They don't even have nowhere to go and play b-ball anymore. This is getting crazy around here now. I don't know if you all seen it all on YouTube. I think they taking it down now. Yeah, they're raising hell up there in Chicago. Y'all have a good day. Keep the good work up, my brother.
Thank you. You want to respond, Doc?
Yeah, you made some excellent points. I was out demonstrating when the district was going to legalize marijuana. I was not supportive of it initially. And the main reason I wasn't is because I had done research showing that marijuana, contrary to what they said, is a very much of a gateway drug. And also had several patients who became psychotic on it. But on the other hand, I found out that 90% of the marijuana arrests were African Americans. And that's when I said, look, we got to have another alternative. So I want to get the message out. Keep it from young people if you can. Let them know that there are alternatives to marijuana as a way to try to deal with their problems. And what we're finding is that a lot of folks who are ending up using marijuana, who dying from fentanyl use, and others are trying to deal with these kinds of social and mental problems that you talk about. They're using to reduce the anxiety, the depression, the feeling of hopelessness. What we got to do is provide positive alternatives so that our young people have something to look forward to. And also so they can look, there's some alternative than getting high. And I always say, we got many of our communities that don't have grocery stores and food. Marijuana is not a good food. So let's make sure we get the resources. We want to do some forums. Let's get the resources to make sure that our communities get proper nutrition and proper health care before we can look at how we're going to develop the recreational dollar.
You know, I'm looking at something from Senator Dick Durbin, a Democrat from Illinois. He's submitting a bill that condemned the mismanagement at the federal prisons for high suicide rates. And it's been over more than 300 people died of suicides, homicides, and accidents in the federal prison between 2014 and 2021. Mm. Numbers that drew fire from a Senate panel. The deaths too often have been the result of mismanagement and operational failure, said Senator Dick Durbin. And most of the men who commit suicide and women are in cells by themselves. And they call them, that they put you in a restricted cell. And believe me, your creativity will find a way if you want to end yourself. I tried a couple of times. That's why they sent me to St. Elizabeth's Hospital. And I stayed over there for 3 years. I had no reason to live, didn't want to live. Something that's tied into this, Doc, that you mentioned about the drugs. We've been meeting with Dr. Edwin Chapman over on Benning Road. And this fentanyl, buprenorphine, and these kind of drugs that's coming out now that's been mixing with these opiates, that's a form of suicide. I know folk who are just saying they had enough and they go get as much drugs as they can and they want to die. They want to take their life because they don't see no sun shining tomorrow. There's no tomorrow for some people, or as they see it, and they feel hopeless and lost and there's nowhere to turn. But there are phone numbers, addresses, and people you can call. Can you suggest, doctor, some people, our listeners, what they can do if they feel or think that a kid might be contemplating suicide, or what they could do? And the same is true for men inside of institutions. What would you suggest, Dr. Lee?
Yeah, unfortunately, in the district, we have a number of resources. Unfortunately, the word has not gotten out enough to be properly addressed. We have a very strong Department of Behavioral Health, just pulled away from Baltimore, the new medical director there, Jonathan Shepherd, who helped set up the Black Mental Health Alliance, and I think doing a great job along with in the district. And the district, you can reach him at 202-673-2200. If it's in a crisis or an emergency anywhere, you can call 988. Although this, the private program is just getting set up, still has some resource issues, but it's there. Use it. And also, if you want to, if you don't have remember those, you can also go into the National Suicide Hotline, 800-273-8255, 800-273-8255. And we have several excellent universities, Howard University, which I was affiliated with, George Washington University, Georgetown, and they have African-American providers, which is another point. And that is that, fortunately, D.C. has several, but much of our country just doesn't have that much in the way of African-American psychologists, social workers, or psychiatrists. You know, we got the same number of doctors that we had in the 1960s. They haven't increased. So you may have a challenge finding the African-American providers, but in the district, in the area, they are here, and we just need to get them linked up to the people who need those services.
How do we get our young people involved in pursuing a career in medicine that you're in?
Excuse me? I'm sorry.
How do we get our young people involved?
Yeah, that's right. What we found is that the 9th and 10th grade is really where the inflection point comes. If we can get them involved with science and so forth in the 9th and 10th grade, we can hook them in. I came from a rural area where just the idea of going to medical school was simply not something you didn't think about. I was raised on a farm and saw the animals try to figure out how they work, but didn't really have the opportunity to think about medicine until I'd come out of school and then in graduate school and had the opportunity. So the messages I want to give is that it's never too late to, but it's never too early either. So start early, get our young people involved in terms of what's happening in the world around them, and just want to encourage them to saying and give them the message that they can make a difference. And that's the other point, and that is what you're doing, Mr. Brown, getting folks on your show and to let folks know you can do it. And I was talking to a lady in our church the other day. She said, well, Anna, I'm 30 years old. That's too late for me. No, you're not. Wasn't too late for me. Not too late for you either. Not everybody's going to be going into medicine. My sons didn't go, but one of them went out there and started his own company in terms of IT. So there are other options that are necessary for our community to be successful. And we need to let our young people know that there are those options.
You know, you're a psychiatrist, and you've been working in this field for years, Doc. What would you say? You gave out some numbers for people to call, but in addition to the numbers you call, if you see somebody, is there any signs that the person can see or be aware of that let them know that this might be the road that this kid is traveling down, and it's something that we can do? Is there something somebody can do if they think or suspect that a kid may be entertaining the thought of committing suicide?
I think you've stated them already. One of them, the kids will come out there and just tell you, I can't take it anymore. Expressing despair, hopelessness. But the other one is kid becomes isolative, misbehaving, especially misbehaving in the classroom. I have a young man now who's addicted to video games. He stops going to school because he wants to do the video games. I also see a lot of young folks who get involved in other kinds of shoplifting, hanging out, no longer hanging out with their friends, disturbances in terms of eating. We found that in much of the DC community, young people who are in distress don't go to sleep. They can't sleep. Those are signs that you should try to intervene. Either if you don't feel you have the skills, reach out to some of the folks I've mentioned to be able to get them to get the support that they need. And I've talked to the psychologists in the DC school system. They are willing to help. They're under-resourced, but they are willing to help. And I think the important thing, at least in the district, is they are there. and that's a plus.
Yes.
Yes, you're correct. My God.
You know, they said young people who died by suicide, research has shown that only 32% had a mental health care visit in the last year before their death. So the kids don't even go into doctors. And in adolescent and teen years, they don't even go to the doctors. And they never had even, because of the stigma connected with mental health in our community, that's folks stay away from that. And that's the thing that we need to focus on in terms of making sure that our kids are there, man. Because again, why is it that we lead in all the categories in a negative balance? I don't care what category you come up with, teenage suicide, teenage death, death inside of prisons, teenage, something that we haven't even talked about, young girls who are pregnant committing suicide.
Yes.
They got young girls who are pregnant committing suicide. They can in life, and they're going to end two lives because they don't see no way out. They don't see no hope. And part of the thing is we need to give hope, compassion and understanding and resources to help these folks. Because all these kids, even though you don't know them, they are ours. They are our kids. And we got to do something to make it better for them. I don't think we have another caller on. Doc, you want to give us some closing?
Yeah, I just want to note to get a chance. I have a book out, Peeling Back the Layers. I'll put it in my word here. Peeling Back the Layers.
Let me see, what's the name of it?
Peeling Back the Layers, African American Mental Health. And it is available on Amazon right now. They got a sale going on in terms of ebooks, so you get it very inexpensively. But also, want to acknowledge some of the people that's been working with us. As you know, Kenny Barnes,
yes,
and Walt Faggot have been aggressive. They've worked in with youth. That's in their correctional system, and can give you some insight in terms of some of the challenges they face in terms of trying to change the system. But the bottom line is that we are now working out to our churches, to our barbershops and others, to our beauty parlors as resources that can be used to help for our young people. And I'm working with some of these local organizations to see that they develop the resources to do it. And let your minister know that there are resources that are willing to work with them in terms of the community. Former medical director for the district, Dr. Ivan Walks, actually has a mental health program in his church. And that's the kind of model that can be very, very helpful to our community.
What church is that?
Excuse me?
What church is
that? I knew you said it. Oh, I have to call Ivan off mine. But I will say that we're working, especially with the elderly, at Zion Baptist Church locally to address some of the issues. And we've actually developed a senior center there. We talked about the young people, but this rate for elderly is extremely high. And you mentioned the excellent work being done by Dr. Chapman. Dr. Chapman has demonstrated that drug abuse is not just a young people's problem. Most of his people are almost as old as I am.
Yes.
And are trying to get treatment for substance abuse problems. So again, this is not just a young people's problem. It's historically has been a problem with the elderly. And the most important thing is we now have many effective treatments that can be used to treat suicide. Suicide can be prevented. The underlying factors can be treated. And if we work as a community and pull the resources that we have existing right now, we can make a difference.
You said a mouthful, Doc, and that's what it is. It's that we need to come together to work together to stop this, because traditionally, the elderly or seniors were the ones or folks who would commit suicide. But now we got an epidemic going with young people committing suicide. And the same thing is going on inside of institutions, in particular out of them jails when somebody's locked up and he's thrown right in and snatched off the street. And the hopelessness and the despair is so overwhelming. So we got the resources to deal with some of this. And I want to thank you, Doc, for coming on and for our folks who are listening. And if anybody listening got some resources that we can share with our listening audience, Please give it to us, because this is a crisis. Our kids are not going to school. They're killing each other. They're using drugs. They're out in the street. And we got people. We got people who can deal with this. So thank you, Dr. William Lawson, Professor of Psychiatry and Behavior Science, George Washington University and Howard University, and a whole lot of more universities that I can't even pronounce. You've been all over, Doc. I want to thank you. We'll be bringing you back. And thanks for dealing with this topic, is Black suicide on the increase in the Black community. And
you
the answer.
So go to yournewbeginningsdc.org. Yournewbeginningsdc.org. And have any questions or any resources that we can share. And what Zion Baptist Church, Dr. Lawson?
Yeah, and Zion Baptist Church right up here, up on
Blagdon Avenue.
Right.
Okay, 16th and Blagdon.
Yes, okay, thank you. Our guest has been Dr. William Lawson. This has been Crossroads. Our subject has been, is Black suicide on the increase in prisons and in the community and our youth. We want to thank you for tuning in. Stay tuned in for next Tuesday. We'll bring you another topic or subject that, that we can bite our teeth into. This has been Crossroads with Mertine, Mike Nasala, our engineer, and Roach Brown, our co-host, and join us this morning to teach it. But she'll be here next week. Thank you. And remember, your inner voice is never wrong. Merry Christmas. Thank you, Doc.
Bethesda Theater presents the SOS Band on Friday and Saturday, September 20th and 21st. Spyro Gyrals celebrating their 50th anniversary on Sunday, October 13th, and Norman Brown on Sunday, October 20th. More information at BethesdaTheater.com.
School is back. Do you need an after-school program for your young one? The Wordsbeats and Life Academy is enrolling for students from third grade up to young adults, with programming weekdays, 3:30 to 6 p.m., offering classes in hip-hop performing and visual arts, as well as business and arts leadership, with access to professional teaching artists, equipment, and resources. Located in Columbia Heights, Northwest Washington, D.C. at St. Stephen's Church. Classes are always free. Enrollment at wblinc.org/academy, based on availability. The fall session begins September 9th. We hope to see you or your young one there at the Words, Beats, and Life After School Academy.
All right, all right.
Remember, wblinc.org/academy.
I'm Renee Bowser, a staunch trade unionist and host of a new WPFW program, Unionism Drives Community, airing Thursdays at 5 p.m. We will share the importance of knowing your rights in the workplace, the impact of unionism on working class advancement beyond the workplace, and how unionism can activate robust community among all of us. That's Unionism Drives Community, Thursdays at 5 p.m. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Are you passionate about eradicating air pollution? Would you like to participate in the Environmental Justice Artivist Fellows Transformative Community Art Project in Ward 5, Washington, D.C.? We're seeking Ward 5 professional and amateur photographer portraits that capture the theme of what clean air in Ward 5 should be. Selected submissions will be featured in the Up in the Air mural design, which will be installed in a prominent Ward 5 location in fall 2024. Submission is free. The deadline is next Saturday, September 14th. Submissions can be made at socialartandculture.info.
Hey, it's that time again. Join WPFW as we move to get fit at the annual 5K run walk for total fitness. Dynamic fitness instructors will be there, free healthy snacks and water, exciting music, boat rides for families, and a double dutch contest and a hand dance contest are all included in the 5K fundraiser. This event takes place at the Bladensburg Waterfront Park, 4601 Annapolis Road in Bladensburg, Maryland, from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. on Saturday, September 14th. Now, for more details on how to register, visit our website, wpfw.org, or call 202-888-5484. That's 202-888-5484. Meet you at the park on Saturday, September 14th. On Saturday, September 14th, 1 p.m. to 7 p.m., WPFW, making a better world, one broadcast at a time.